This is Petey Pidge.
I am Mike.
J-Mac.
Brutal Dudes.
You guys have, what's your guys' longest standing friend? Like years wise.
How many years?
God.
My friend Tina and I have been friends for probably 30 plus years now. Mm,
that's good.
Yeah.
Pete, you got one other than your brother that's that long?
Well, I mean, my brother's my brother. So I have a weird, like, I think I'm muted.
No, we can hear you.
No, I don't know. Okay. Sorry. Yeah. Something popped up, but I don't know. I don't like, it's weird. So I don't think of my brother as a friend, and I don't think of my wife as a friend. Like, my wife is my wife. My brother's my brother.
Are they learning today that they're not your friend?
No. I've had this conversation with them. I don't know if I've had this conversation with my brother, but like, I feel like
you told your wife, like, I'm not your friend.
I've told her that when we were dating, when we were just like boyfriend, girlfriend, I'm like, we're more than just friends. Like, that's something more, like, and it's just, I don't know. It's just this how, like, I categorize things. It's like my dichotomy, I guess. I don't know how I can explain it, but I just think that there's like that label kind of comes with things like, you know, there are things that I'm willing to talk about with my wife that I'm not willing to talk about with my best friend, you know? So, and like, I'm things that I'm willing to talk about with my brother that I'm not willing to talk about with my wife or with my best friend. I'm just saying. I think my longest standing friend or longest running friend had to be like, God, it's sixth grade, so that'd be like 13, so it'd be like 20 something years, 24 years, something like that. 23 years. I can't do math. I'm an English teacher. What do you want from me? What about you, Jimmy?
So my longest standing friend currently, I've been friends with since we were 11, maybe 12.
Damn.
How old are you guys?
I'm 40.
You're 40?
Okay. I'm 35.
35. Okay. I'm 40 as well.
Yeah. So okay. What would that be? What's that? How many years is that?
Combined?
No, I mean for my friend.
That's like Voltron, like we said.
Yeah.
Your powers combined.
We can get a senior discount at McDonald's.
Fucking Mum Ra comes on.
If you combine all of our ages, we're dead.
We can get that $1.99 Grand Slam at Denny's.
So I've been friends. I'm not going to use his name right away. But I've been friends with this person since we were probably, I would say more like 13 or 14. So that's probably a good
25, like 27
years. Yeah.
So it's a really long time.
Yeah.
Through the span of this friendship, we have been through a ton of things. We are both from pretty different backgrounds. I would say we were fairly intelligent people. He ended up going to Catholic school. I went to public school, but we knew a lot of the same people. He actually helped me through a really dark time in my life, which is my first year of college. We've been friends for a really long time, but when you're friends with someone for that long of a time, you develop a rapport with them that you instantly know is probably comic gold, but also it's so easy to get under the skin of that person that it sets you off. But I think the beauty of our friendship, is that as soon as we set each other off to the point where we're like, fuck you, we instantly are like, whatever, this is a useless thing. So one of the things that we were known for when we were in college was having these debates about things that are just completely mundane and don't have any bearing on society. And like, to the point where people that we were friends with were like, all right, we get it. Shut the fuck up. You guys have to stop arguing about this. And I remember the ones, I know there's more than one. And if he ever comes on the show, he will bring up other ones that we've had that I just don't remember. But I remember this specific one because this lasted like almost a month. He said he didn't like a band, and it really deep down irritated me that he didn't like this band because I felt like he wasn't giving this band a chance.
What was the band?
I don't remember the band. He'll remember who it is, but I don't remember who it is. But I was like, dude, you can't judge that band. And this is a completely innocuous statement if I made it now. And he would be like, why? And I would, and I said in the argument, because you haven't experienced them in different venues. And what I was trying to get across is, and I think this is the disconnect between he and I, where we have these sorts of arguments, where they develop from, is I'm trying to make a point, but I don't state it clearly. And he takes it for its literal sense and then gets pissed that the literal sense of what I'm saying is not what I'm trying to get across. And it twists around and just ultimately pisses both of us off. So like I said, well, you can't judge them because you haven't heard them in all venues. And he's like, what do you mean? And I'm like, what I meant was, like, a lot of bands are better live than they are on recording. Like one band that I'll use specifically, Story of the Year, are like, I don't really like their recorded stuff, but live, they were so good live that I was like, damn, who is this band? And the people were like, Story of the Year. And I'm like, dude, they're fucking great live. I swear to God, I don't remember the name of the band that we were arguing over, but I said, you haven't heard it in all venues. And he goes, what do you mean? I was like, you've only heard it on CD. You haven't heard it live. You haven't heard it on vinyl. You haven't heard it of another live performance. And he's like, I don't think I need to do that to make a judgment about a band. And I was like, but you do, because if you write this band off and it's actually a good band, you're going to look like an asshole because you didn't give this band the proper chance. And I think that this band deserves a proper chance. And we argued this fact for probably a straight month, and people, as soon as we would start up with it, would walk out of the room. Like, we could clear a room with this. Anyway, last night I talked to him for the first time in a couple, probably maybe like a year. I would say like a year, like a deep conversation. We chat, we message, we Facebook, but it never needs to be super long. And
send carrier pigeons.
Yeah, right. I do smoke signals a lot.
Pen pals.
I'll eat some sort of peyote and sit in the desert with my Native American friends. And we, do vision quests to where he's at. And I visit him, while he's doing something and focusing, stuff like that.
Do y'all send edible arrangements to each other?
Yes.
Nice. All the
time. But we got into a debate yesterday, and this person is the only person in my life who's allowed to hang up on me in anger, and I don't get angry. And I'm going to tell you, this is probably the fifth or sixth time that we've gotten into arguments where he's hung up on me and I've laughed him to the hang up. Like, he'll be like, you know what? I'm just hanging up. And I'll be like, okay, have a good night. Yesterday's conversation, though, I did not expect to take the turn that it did. We were discussing the Mighty Ducks, the movie from 1992. Where the team of ragtag hockey players comes from behind and becomes the underdog and wins. Emilio Estevez, Josh Jackson, Keenan Thompson is in the sequel, I think. There's a lot of stars and people that came from this movie.
I'm a big Emilio Estevez fan.
I love that. Emilio, I think he's the underrated Estevez son.
Yeah, 100%.
Because Men at Work is such a great movie.
Men at Work. Did you ever see Rated X?
No, but I like.
Excellent.
I'm trying to think of the other one that he was in that I really, really enjoyed.
Wisdom was another one I really liked.
And I'm not going to be able to remember it off the top of my head, but
he was in Home. I'm a huge Emilio Estevez fan.
Dude, he's awesome. He's awesome. His dad is in an episode of Mystery Science Theater. I think it's called Soul Taker.
Okay.
It's Joe Estevez. And you can tell that it's him because he looks like Charlie Sheen, which he's probably not supposed to, but like you can see the resemblance of him with his brothers.
And I was trying to think of the Western movie, Young Guns.
Young Guns. That's what it is. It's Young Guns.
So good in that one.
Love that movie. So I'm discussing this with him, and basically what was going to happen was, I would like to do an episode. I think we talked about this earlier. I'd like to do an episode where we talk about movies and we talk about maybe the villain is not who we think it is, and reinterpreting movies that we watched when we were kids and seeing if they hold up as strong if you re-scrutinize things in the movie. And I watched The Mighty Ducks, and I looked at The Mighty Ducks, and I'm like, there's a lot wrong with this movie that we support this team. And the first thing he said that didn't sit right with me is, he's like, well, Gordon Bombay's not the star. And I'm like, he's not?
He's definitely the star.
The movie starts with him as a lawyer.
Yeah.
He's the star.
Yeah.
And he said, no, Charlie Conway is the star. And I was like, Charlie Conway is the supporting character that he takes under his wing. But he doesn't teach these kids discipline. He doesn't teach them. He tries, but no kid picks this stuff up. And basically the crux of the argument was that the flying V would never work in real life. So he's teaching these kids ultimately against this team of disciplined players that practice. They're good. Hockey is going to be their life. The Hawks. They want to win. There's nothing wrong with wanting to win. You should want to win if you do something. You shouldn't do by any means necessary hit people and throttle people. But if there's a team that sucks, I'm an advocate of not just letting them win because they need self-esteem. Like, fuck that. You should beat the shit out of them. That'll teach them to either get better at hockey or quit. And quite honestly, if you're not that good, quit. Because you're just going to delude yourself for the rest of your life that you're good at hockey. Anyway, philosophical things aside, I watched the Flying V and I'm like, this is an impossible scenario. And Marcus was like, it takes absolute... I said his name. Shit. Sorry. He said, this is a scenario that they learn discipline. And I'm like, the Flying V will not work. It's an illegal move. And he's like, it takes discipline to do it. You can't do it. I was like, you can't win with it because it's an illegal move. So why would you teach something to someone that's an illegal move? And it got to the point where it was heated and we were screaming at each other about the Flying V, that it's an irrelevant thing. He swears it's how they learn discipline because you can't do it. Now, he's never played a day of hockey in his life. So he doesn't understand the intricacies of the sport or skating. And I'm pretty sure that once I looked it up, the Flying V is literally two interference calls. Like, you can't do it because it's interference. So I don't understand how that's teaching kids discipline. Yes, I understand it's a movie. And I understand that it was for the basis of the movie. There's a lot of things in that movie that they do that you're like, yeah, that's not reality. But like, if you're looking at it from another perspective, if you're taking a second look at it, Bombay does nothing for these kids and literally reaps the benefits of them winning a championship to get a minor league contract. He's a lawyer who's super cocky, gets a DUI, has to train these kids, treats them like shit for the first half of the movie, then feels bad, gets the company that he works for to pay for their things, and then essentially disses the company and quits, and they still have all the equipment that the company paid for, and then teaches them moves that are not going to work in a regular hockey setting. So they're not going to ever get good at hockey. They're just going to do these fake moves until they get into college and then are exposed that they can't do this stuff. You think the knuckle puck would be able to even be tried in a college hockey program? No. You know why also? Because it's ridiculous. No one has ever tried. I'm sure people have tried, and everyone that tried was probably laughed out of their fucking pads. But my point is, the Flying V is not feasible. I understand what it's supposed to mean. I get that it ties to ducks because ducks use a Flying V. It's intelligent. It's creative. It's not ever going to work. And that's my point, is that makes Bombay the bad guy. And Marcus did not want to admit this. And we got into a very heated argument to where he was like, you know what? You know what? I don't even care. You win. And I was like, I knew I would win eventually. And he went, okay. I'll talk to you later. And I was like, good night. But I don't know. It was a very funny conversation to have, like fighting over the Flying V. I don't know. 20 years later, that it's not a feasible move.
No, I think Mighty Ducks as a movie, it's weird because it's this redemption arc. Like, it is Bombay trying to redeem himself for this like shitty thing that he did. But then it turns into this underdog story, and everybody really loves an underdog story.
He never really redeems himself.
No, but he does bang the one kid's mom.
He bangs Charlie's mom.
True.
Thanks, Charlie's mom.
I don't remember the second one enough to like.
He like, gets picked, so he goes. I'll tell you. I remember.
Is that the Olympic one? Is that the junior Olympic team?
He goes to the minor leagues. He almost gets a contract. Yeah. Shatters his knee or his ankle again, and gets sent back home, humbled, but not completely humbled, because then Team USA says, "We want you to teach the Team USA kids how to win like you did with the Ducks."
Yeah.
So what does he do? he takes this team of ragtag Ducks and ragtag people, you know, seven other players from the rest of the country. So like, you know, there's 20 players from Minneapolis and the rest of them are all from Texas and, you know, these other places. And the only one that was the coolest one was Goldberg, cause he was from Philly. So anyway, he teaches all these kids to play together again. Ridiculous. Like, I'm sorry. The one that the move that pissed me off the most was the guy hog tying the guy from hitting the girl. If you can't take a hit on the hockey ice, like there's a different
typically kind of the ice. Hockey ice.
If you can't take a hit on the hockey ice, eh? You shouldn't be out there, eh? What's all that about? But he uses a lasso and he stops the guy. If I'm the coach, I'm like, dude, what the fuck? That's a penalty. That's assault. You're going to get kicked out of the game and you're not going to ever be able to play for the Junior Olympics again.
That's
instead, assault, he puts a fucking cowboy hat on and he lassos a guy and just drags him along from another country. Yeah, America, that's what Americans do. We don't win. We just lasso people and throw them around.
That's a deeper conversation.
It didn't look to me like he taught any of these players anything. They all had these skills. They just needed to learn to like trust their skills, and they do that, but not because he puts them in. It's more because he does that. But even then he becomes a dick as a USA coach. He bangs the trainer from the other team, the Iceland chick. And then he goes back to banging the teacher for the American team, who's just this mousy lady. I don't know. I think she was miscast in the movie. I really didn't like her as a character at all. Like, even when he chose her at the end, I was like, nah, I probably would have chosen the leggy blonde Iceland chick again. I would have sent the American teacher over.
But I don't remember any of this from the movie, to be perfectly honest.
But they like, so then they come together. So what does he do when they all eventually like learn that they need to play together? He makes them all Ducks. So ultimately, he took the identity away from these USA team guys that were from other states and stuff, and he makes them all Ducks. So he just amalgamates them into this thing that he was in before. And again, he just rides them to the championship. He doesn't really teach them anything new. He doesn't teach them how to do anything. To me, it was like, I don't know, man. I see Bombay as the bad guy.
I mean, the flying V is obviously a symbol of teamwork.
Yeah, dude, but it's stupid. There's a million other things you can do as teamwork. Like, you know what would have worked just as well as the flying V? How about a V formation in front of the goal and you're just passing back and forth till there's an opening and you shoot it into the goal? That's more believable to me from a hockey standpoint than having everyone go behind the goal of their own goal and then coming out together as a V. Like, as an opposing player, you know what I would do? I would knock the dude in the front over, like with a hit, so that he tripped the two people that are directly behind him, and then they trip those other two. Then the whole team is laid out on the ice, and you have free reign to just score, which I'm pretty sure when they try the flying V a couple of times is what they do. Like, it works. I don't know. It's very unbelievable to me. I'm sad that it caused a hang up fight with me and Marcus, because I don't like getting into those arguments as I get older with him because they're very asinine and ridiculous. However, there's always that little bit that's there where we just come at each other's throats about the dumbest shit. And I just happened to be Mighty Ducks. And I was like, in my head while we were fighting, I was like, why are we fighting about the flying V? Why is this even a conversation that we're having? I don't understand. I mean, maybe if he comes on, he can give some insight to why it ended up devolving to the fucking cutthroat argument that we had. But it was just, it's not a thing. Like, it's just, I'm sorry. Like, I can't take it seriously.
There are plenty of social medias out there. There are plenty of social media accounts out there that like Twitters and YouTubes and all that will look at a movie and break down all of the things. Yeah. It's like, yeah, it's not going to happen. So, and I'm pretty sure, I don't know if they've done Mighty Ducks, but I'm pretty sure that's already been covered. Like, oh yeah, no, Flying V would just be immediately discovered and destroyed.
Half the shots that they take in the movie are wide open shots. You're a hockey fan, Pete. Like you watch hockey pretty regularly.
I do enjoy hockey, right?
No.
Your dad was a hockey player.
Yeah. I knew there was a hockey connection, but like, how often have you guys ever seen just an open shot?
Right.
Where a guy, not just an open shot where like, oh, that guy has an open shot, where they stop mid ice and cock back like it's a fucking gun. Like, oh yeah, no, that guy's gonna shoot. Just let him shoot. We'll get it.
Only for buzzer beaters.
but even then, like, it's not usually like a stop mid ice and everyone just turns and is like, oh no, he's gonna shoot the puck. It's like, no, throw a fucking stick in front of him. Take a penalty. Stop the shot from going in. It's unrealistic. And that was my point, is like, I don't think that Bombay teaches the kids anything. And I don't think that Charlie Conway is the star of the movie, because you don't see him in the beginning.
Yeah, usually. I agree with that. It's Bombay's story.
Yeah, it's 100%. All the way through, it's Bombay's story.
I'm waiting for a Goon Mighty Ducks crossover movie.
Well, then he dies in the second one, doesn't he?
Who does?
The Goon.
Does he? I didn't see the second one.
I didn't see either one of them, but I thought that he dies in the second
one. Oh, I don't know. I didn't see the second one. The first one's really good.
I heard
first it was one was good. Rad.
Yeah.
First one was damn good.
The video I watched, it was Austin Matthews, the guy from the Maple Leafs, who I love. He's one of my favorite hockey players. But he was breaking down hockey in movies, and they did Miracle. And basically he said, no, these are training. This is actual training that you do. He's like, everything is in the 70s. So it's what you would have done in the 70s. He's like, stuff is more advanced now, but like, these are the drills that you would have done to get good enough to beat the Soviets, which is like a tough thing. Which always makes me laugh when people talk about Team USA beating the Soviets, because when the Soviets came over and played the Flyers, like, we were such dicks to them that they skated off the ice after like the first period of getting hit because they were being pusses. And it's like, why won't they make that movie? And that's, and it also upsets me, because I know for a while Rob Zombie was working on a Broad Street Bullies movie.
Yeah.
And I would have loved to have seen his take on the fucking, on Dave the Hammer Schultz just knocking somebody around in the fucking Soviets. That's where I would have started the movie, was that scene. Like, just because it's not only does it exemplify what I think at the time was the city's identity as a sports city, but it also, like, it's very much like Invincible, where it shows you where we were at as a country, as like a nation, as a city. But it also is like, you know, everyone hated the Flyers until this game. And then everyone in America was behind the Flyers, because they walked over every other team till they got to the Flyers. Then the Flyers were like, we may not beat you in points, but you guys are going to be sore at the end of this one. And then I remember it's Bobby Clark just fucking clotheslines this one guy. And I watched it on tape and I'm like, that is fucking amazing, dude. He fucking laid that guy out. He didn't see it coming at all. And the Soviets just got so pissed, they got up and walked away, and they looked like huge fucking wimps. And the Flyers looked great. And then the next time I don't know if they ever got a rematch, but if they did, I'm sure that the Flyers fucking walked all over him because they were afraid of him. But it's, you know, it's the definition of intimidation. And it's like, you know, since then we've been a deteriorating fucking fan base that lives off of those two moments in our fucking entire career.
I would love to see Rob Zombie's like cinematography brought to a sports movie. I think that'd be interesting as hell to see, honestly.
I was really happy he picked the Broad Street Bullies, but I'll tell you the truth. I think he would be much better served if he did the Raiders of the 70s. I think a Raiders movie by Rob Zombie would be fucking amazing, with like Kenny Stabler and what's the dude? I can't think of his name. The wide receiver. You guys aren't gonna know it.
Nope, you got me, man.
John, I got nothing.
John Madden's Raiders, basically. They were like the fucking Raider Nation. They were like actual like pirates. They fucking just played like no holds barred, no rules. They just dominated people. And it was like, I think that would be great to tell that story, because there's so many eclectic characters on that story. It brings up one of my favorite, it reminds me of one of my favorite writers. His name's Jeff Perlman. I came across this guy when I was in Chicago, when we went to Chicago for a game. It was recommended to me by a waiter at Gino's Pizza. Which is ironic, because, you know, Gino's Steaks, but this is like the best deep dish pizza in Chicago. It's Gino's East. We went to, you get to write your name on the wall, and like, you know, everybody signs the wall when you walk in. They have great pizza. huge mozzarella sticks. Mozzarella sticks are like, they have a circumference. They're like fucking, they're amazing. But anyway, while we were there,
they have a circumference.
Like, while we were there.
That's funny.
The guy was like, oh, are you a Phillies fan? Because I had my Phillies gear on and my friend had his Cubs gear on. And he was like, yeah. He's like, did you ever read the book Boys Will Be Boys? And I was like, why would I read that book? It's about the Cowboys. And he's like, no, dude, it's like, it's deep dive into the Cowboys of the late 90s. And it's so well written and so in depth that like I couldn't put it down. And I ended up going back and finding this guy's other books. He wrote one about Roger Clemens, one about Barry Bonds, one about the Mets from the, I think it's the 80s when they won the championship. But it's like he gets so like he interviews like the fucking people who served him at the local pizza shop to see like what they were like as people. And it's just, he just writes so well. I'm reading one of his books right now. It's about the Kobe Bryant, Shaquille O'Neal Lakers and their dynasty. And the next one, he's releasing one in, I think before Christmas. It's about Bo Jackson, who I love Bo Jackson. I think Bo Jackson was so cool because he played both sports really, really good, football and baseball. But anyway, I would love it if Rob Zombie took one of these stories and like told the story, because I don't care what anybody says. I like most of his movies. Like I think I've only seen one that I really didn't enjoy. And that was the second Halloween, just because I didn't get it. Like there's a lot of shit in it that I just didn't understand. Like the white horse and his wife riding in like a ghost, like on a pale horse. And like, I think we talked about this before, his album Educated Horses that nobody remembers because there's no good songs on it. And then he released, I think he literally released the album after that, Hellbilly Deluxe 2, Electric Boogaloo. No, I'm just kidding. But Hellbilly Deluxe with another, I think there was like there's a sequel to a song on there, which we were also talking about, doing sequels to songs.
Yeah, I like some Rob Zombie movies, but I feel like I'm at a tipping point where I think he's made more stuff I don't like now.
Really?
Than I do like.
What didn't you like?
I didn't like Halloween 2. I didn't like Lords of Salem.
I didn't see Lords of Salem. I did want to see it. What about that one that's a number?
31.
Yeah, was that any good?
No, I didn't like that one. I didn't like Three from Hell.
Was that the sequel to
It's the third in the
House of Thousand Corpses series. Devil's yeah.
Remarks, I didn't dislike Three from Hell. I felt like at the end, I felt like very much like that movie was fan service.
Yeah.
But I also felt like he got to a point after they escape where he was like, what do I do with these characters now? And I kind of just, it makes me question, like, why did he do the movie?
Yeah.
Other than to serve fans, which I don't hate. Like I'm not mad when people like are like, man, we have so many fans for this. Like, let's like again, we'll bring it back. Bill and Ted 3. I wasn't mad when I heard
they were going to make
it. And I liked it too. I loved it. And I cried at the end. I'm not going to lie. I cried. But I wasn't mad that they made the movie because I wanted more from those characters. I wasn't mad when they made the Matrix reboot they just made, even though it wasn't that good.
I liked half of it.
Yeah, it was. But I just wanted to see those characters progress. That's kind of with
me. And I love anything with Neil Patrick Harris.
He's phenomenal.
I didn't get a chance to see the fourth Matrix. I heard it was kind of meta. So I didn't get a chance to check it out.
It's very meta, but I don't fully dislike it. I just think that like they got to a point and they were like, all right, we did this. It kind of reminds me of like, you remember how you felt when you saw the new Star Wars and you saw the scene where they're running and like, you know what's coming, right? When they're running through the desert world, you know they're going to find the Falcon. Like everyone saw that coming. But like,
I didn't see that coming.
Oh, I totally saw that coming. But I was still super stoked that they were going to do it because I'm like, dude, they're going to find the Falcon. And then it made me forget that Han Solo was somewhere in this universe. And then when he shows up next, you're like, fuck, dude, Han and Chewie. I'm okay with that. What I don't like is once you get past that initial fan service, when you don't have when there's no clear point to go to. Like, that's why I hate when people shit on the fourth Indiana Jones. Because I don't think it was that bad of a movie.
I didn't like it. But
I didn't see it.
It, for me, it goes to my inherent problem with all Steven Spielberg movies.
Yeah.
which it's not really that movie's fault. He recycles a lot of stuff.
Yes.
A lot of stuff. And that's a particularly egregious movie when it comes to it.
Yeah. And I can see that.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of scenes in it where you're just like, this happened in another Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
But there was a plot and you could see where the plot was going, and it wasn't a bad plot. I think part of that movie's problem is that Steven Spielberg came back to direct the fourth one. I think he should have left that to someone else and maybe just oversaw it and been like, nah, you can't do that in an Indiana Jones movie. But at the same time, like, there's parts in it that I really love. Like when he's in the room with all the artifacts and he's fighting the Germans, I love that whole scene. Until he gets into the lead lined refrigerator, which is just asinine. Like, come on. No one in the world believed that he would survive that in a fucking refrigerator. Sorry, it's just not going to happen.
I think where the movie really lost me was Shia LaBeouf swinging with monkeys.
Yes.
In the trees.
Yes.
CGI.
That was monkeys. Ridiculous. That was ridiculous. I do love Shia LaBeouf, though.
I like Shia LaBeouf. It's not him that was the problem. But the movie, it does the Steven Spielberg thing. And there's a thing that I've always said that, so I'm actually not a big Steven Spielberg fan.
Really?
And I think where part of that comes from is I feel like he made a movie about aliens and he made a movie about Nazis. And he's been redoing those two themes over and over and over again. And later in his movies, he's combined those multiple times, including Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
And he's done it in like three or four movies now where there's Nazis and aliens. And it's just like, okay, just do anything different.
I
get it though. At the same time, like if I was making tens of millions of dollars to pump out the same movie again, I would do the same thing. So I can't judge him on a personal level.
And I'll pull away a little bit from that. Like, I think that he did a couple of things really good, but then I think what he did is he rode those things. Like, I love Close Encounters of the Third Kind. That's Spielberg.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great movie. E.T., great movie. Both aliens. Jaws. First Jaws was great. I love the first Jaws. First Jurassic Park. Great. But what I do, and you're right, he does rehash stuff. And I think that's the problem, is like he tries to go back and do too much with those same, just those boring plots. Like,
yeah,
AI was terrible.
Oh, AI was awful.
Bicentennial Man was not that good.
I didn't even see that one.
That's Robin Williams. That's the only reason I watched it. But it was like, it's just not that good. And I feel like Spielberg overall is like a... You all right, Pete?
I muted because I thought a sneeze was going to happen, and it didn't fucking happen. It's like stuck in my nose. I'm dying.
Spielberg sneeze?
Yeah, the sneezeberg.
Yeah, I feel like he lands on something that works, and he just drives it into the ground.
Yeah. And that's, like, I love all three Indiana Jones movies. I really do. Like, even Last Crusade, I really enjoyed. Because that was, at the time, that was when I was coming into my, like, movie fandom. So it was like, I remember that, and Dick Tracy came out the same summer. And the Dick Tracy movie's great. Great. Still great. Like, if you watch it now, you're like, damn, Al Pacino was in that movie? What the fuck? Still so good. What's
your favorite Al Pacino movie?
My favorite Pacino?
Top of the head.
Man, it depends on what you mean. My favorite performance of his or my favorite character of his, because they're two different things.
What are they?
My favorite performance from Al Pacino is Heat.
Okay.
My favorite character is Donnie Brasco. I fucking love him in Donnie Brasco. I'm in the medical books for that. Donnie, you know, sometimes you don't make any fucking sense. It's just so good. Like, he's so good in that movie. But I love Pacino. He's one of my teachers actually met him. Pete, you know this story because you had Dr. G.
Yeah.
He met him, like, had dinner with him. They were doing a conference in the same place. And Dr. G was, I think, he was a student, right? Pete?
Maybe.
I think he was a student. Anyway, he was going to this lecture and he ended up seeing the lecture and it was great. And Pacino did his whole thing and he ended up walking to like a coffee shop. And Pacino was at the coffee, was getting coffee in the same coffee shop. And Dr. G was like, hey, you know, I really enjoyed your lecture. I was in the class, really enjoyed this whole situation. And he's like, you know, I'm about to go get dinner. Would you like to go to dinner? And Pacino was like, yeah. So we ended up sitting with him going to dinner, and they had this like long conversation about all his movies and his theory of like acting. And he said, Pacino just sat there and talked to me. Dr. G's like an Indian, like from Bengal, India, right? India. Bengal.
I don't remember. It's been so long. I'm sorry, man. Like grad school was grueling for me. Like I was working 40 hours. I was working 40 hours a week. I was, you know, busting my ass in grad school. I'm looking at Al Pacino movies right now, being like, because the first off my top of my head, I'm like, oh, Scarface is like, oh wait, I've seen him in like two other things. Like I haven't seen a lot of
Scarface is good, but I feel like there's parts of Scarface that he overacted.
I
love the movie. Yeah. It did, but there's just some parts where I'm like,
because the movie's pretty over the top.
That's how I feel about The Godfather crazy. Too. Is like he just.
Godfather feels almost theatrical when you watch it, so I think it fits again.
Yeah, I love.
I'm gonna throw out Cruising as my favorite Pacino movie.
I don't know if I've ever seen that.
Oh,
I've seen that one.
Do yourself a favor.
I really like Carlito's Way. He's great in that.
Go try and watch Cruising with reading almost nothing about it or as minimal about it as possible.
Okay,
it's weird and dark. And
I love those type of movies.
It was really controversial when it came out. So you actually, there is no director's cut of it. William Friedkin, who did French Connection and The Exorcist, directed it. They had to cut like a half hour out of the movie just to get it released. And
I'll have to check it out. Dude, I love
Al Pacino. It's a young Pacino movie too.
1980.
Right after Godfather, early 80s.
He's great. Yeah. He's great. I love, is it Son of a Woman? That's him too, right?
Yeah.
Great. Heat, great.
Yeah, I like him in a lot of stuff, but I try and get people to watch Cruising, and I try not to put them off of it because it's weird and dark. So I don't like to tell people too much about it, but it's like, go check it out. It's weird and dark.
Is he he's Devil's Advocate too, right?
Yeah, he was in Devil's Advocate.
Another good one.
He was in that Adam Sandler movie where Adam Sandler plays himself and his twin sister who Pacino's in.
He was in that?
Jack and Jill.
Yeah, I just saw that up there.
Yeah, that was such a stupid movie. Should have said that is my favorite Pacino movie, Jack and Jill. He crushed it in that fucking movie.
Jack and Jill is my favorite movie that I ever did. That's my Pacino impression. I'm in the medical books for that.
Ooh,
You go to the bow. I'm going to stay in the stern. I'm disgusted by you, Donnie.
Jesus Christ.
Dude, I love that movie. I remember when I first saw it. It's one of the movies that made me rediscover Johnny Depp because he was so good next to Pacino. Like as much as Johnny Depp is a pretentious douchebag, when he acts next to Pacino, you're like, damn, dude, he's holding his own.
Johnny Depp used to be a great actor. Yeah, I think the problem is he hit a thing where he just got lazy and every character is kind of the same.
Yeah, I think he tried to do other stuff. And I also think that like a couple of movies that he did weren't supposed to be good. And they became good. Like, I remember seeing the first Pirates of the Caribbean and being like, this is going to be terrible. I saw it in the theater and I was like, this movie's fucking great. Like, it made me want to do pirate stuff. Like, I legitimately, like, not even like little kids.
Steal
stuff,
a boat and,
let's put some patches on our eye. I wanted to do like.
I wanted to go murder people, steal their boat.
I wanted to get scurvy.